On behalf of Ethel and all the members of the Burt Blatt family, I want to welcome you to this celebration of the life of Burton Blatt. First, a few matters of importance to all of us. Ethel has requested that when the service is over, rather than exit out the back, as most of you came in, that we go down these two stairways on this corner and the two on the back corners, and then proceed to the Heroy lobby, where there will be a reception. Now, the Heroy building is straight west of Hendricks Chapel. It's the second building. You'll see it immediately with a large glass front with the lobby immediately inside the entrance. So all of you are welcome to come there immediately after the service to do the greetings at that location. Also, at the end of the service, we will have the postlude music from the string quartet, and we ask you to remain seated and to observe that postlude music as a part of this memorial. We want to thank members of the football team for the services they have provided for this service. Bert fancied himself as, I think in serious humor, a football coach, but he was certainly a player, and we want to pay him tribute at that point as well. We want to thank very much the string quartet that is performing for us here today in honor and in memory of Burton, and all of you for coming and doing him honor and one another with your presence. Would you now join me in a word of prayer or silent meditation? Eternal God, Spirit of all of life and all that is, we who are gathered here live lives which have, by providence or accident or both, traveled terrestrial paths with Burton Blatt. In fact, we have become so pleased with our lot in that regard that we had come to count on the beauty of doing so for another 2 or 3 decades. Sadly, our lot is now to celebrate what has been and not what will be in this relationship. Happily, we have much to celebrate and much for which to be very grateful. It is a privilege to have shared Bert's humor, his wit, his love of sport, his zest for the dignity of all, his impatience at those times when dignity seemed to slip through the cracks of our institutions, through the cracks of our deliberations, through the cracks of our personal habits. His insights about our academic endeavors, our religious endeavors and practices, our institutions of higher learning, indeed this institution, which he loved dearly, have been much appreciated. Yes, we have been richly blessed to have had Burton Blatt walking amongst us. We have lost much, and indeed, we have gained much. Amen.
It was John Kennedy who said, "The poet and the politician have this in common. Their greatness depends on the courage with which they face the challenges of life." We come together in celebration of the life of a courageous man, one of life's poets, a person of great imagination, expressive gifts, and special sensitivity. Burton Blatt completed his Bachelor of Science degree at New York University, Master of Arts at Teachers College, Columbia, and in 1956 earned his doctorate in special education at Pennsylvania State University. His life was that of teacher and professor. From 1949 to 1950, he served as a teacher of English and social studies. Between 1950 and 1955, he taught mentally retarded children, an experience that was to form the foundation of his professional career. Between 1956 and 1961, Burt was professor and chairman of the Department of Special Education at New Haven State Teachers College, where he helped create the first of three psychoeducational clinics that marked his career, beacons in the developing field of special education. In 1961, he began his tenure at Boston University as professor and chairman of the Special Education Department. Burt came to Syracuse University in 1969 as director of the Division of Special Education and Rehabilitation, a position he held until his appointment as dean of the School of Education in 1976. Burton Blatt's career was remarkable in the honors earned, which stand as a tribute both to the man and the profession he served. In 1967, the Massachusetts Psychological Association cited him, quote, for outstanding contributions to the advancement of psychology as a science, as a profession, and as a means of promoting human welfare. In 1969, the governor of Massachusetts awarded him a special citation in recognition of his service to the Commonwealth as assistant commissioner and director of the Division of Mental Retardation. In 1970, in commemoration of Syracuse University's 100th anniversary, Burt was named one of six centennial professors. The American Association on Mental Deficiency presented him with its National Humanitarian Award in 1974 and elected him president of the association for the historic year 1976. Purdue University presented him with the Kephart Memorial Award in 1974, and in that same year, Ithaca College awarded Burton Blatt the honorary degree Doctor of Humane Letters. Special recognitions continued unabated throughout the 70s and 80s. In 1984, his colleagues invited him to deliver the J. Richard Street Memorial Lecture. Imparting wisdom to his colleagues, Burt said, "I believe that those who find a vocation, a life in the academy rather than a career, will find here riches beyond wealth, and fulfillment beyond even what people dare to dream." Over 300 books, monographs, chapters, journal articles, and editorships were produced in an unending commitment to scholarship and writing. In 1966, Blatt and Kaplan authored Christmas in Purgatory, a photographic essay on mental retardation. This publication and the founding in 1971 of the Syracuse University Center on Human Policy stand as internationally recognized landmarks in the emancipation of mentally retarded and other disabled persons. Exodus from Pandemonium, Souls in Extremis, Revolt of the Idiots, The Family Papers, and the In and Out series are treasured holdings in the collections of professionals throughout this country and abroad. Time today is too limited, his accomplishments too large. One of the dean's colleagues said of him, "He was a shining light in a vast field of darkness." Another wrote to say, "Our lives have been enriched by knowing him, and because of that, he will never be gone completely."
We're all here this afternoon because of the very high regard, great affection we had for Burt Blatt. A few of us have the privilege of expressing our feelings by saying a few words out loud, but all of us will be reflecting on how great a privilege it was to know and work with him. I saw Burt in a blend of three ingredients. There was first a profound faith in human perfectibility. combined with a conviction that those who wish to change others might first need to change themselves. On a number of occasions when I've pressed vigorously for, shall we say, a behavioral modification, Bert would first assure me with complete confidence that we could do it, but then he would add gently, but with the same confidence, that first we may need to modify our own behavior toward those whose behavior we wish to change. The second ingredient was the dedication of a zealot to demonstrating human perfectibility by making life better in everything he did. He not only believed in perfectibility, he was a perfecter. He was a self-fulfilling prophet. The third ingredient was good humor. A zealot is often thought of as somber or of constantly serious mien, but not Bert Black. He loved, and he loved to tell good stories, even some I thought did not deserve such love. And he was cheerful, buoyant, engaging. So these three qualities, faith in human perfectibility, zeal to demonstrate that his faith was well-founded, and good humor, made him a star, a sparkling person on the Syracuse campus. I believe all of us are better because he was with us.
Burton Blatt was an excellent dean. He brought to his deaning responsibilities the qualities which he displayed so abundantly in all of his endeavors: intelligence, intense effort, commitment, integrity, fairness and sensitivity, and a kind of toughness of spirit that was rooted in a sound and moral set of personal values. Everything he did was approached with optimism, high expectations, and joyous ebullience. When Burton Blatt was fired up, he could spin out more interesting ideas in an afternoon than most of us can generate in a year. Many of his ideas were first-rate and have been implemented and brought to full fruition. Bert was intrigued by ideas, and he always wanted to hear what others thought about his and to learn all about theirs. He loved to argue in defense of an idea, but he did so only as a means for coming more quickly to an understanding of alternate ways of looking at things. He did not find it difficult to give up gracefully on those ideas which didn't pan out. At the heart of Burton Blatt's deaning was intellectual activity and ferment of exceptional breadth and intensity. He had an extraordinary ability to integrate the life of the mind with effective practical management skills. This was, I believe, the essence of his exceptional administrative style. Our legacy from him is a prestigious school of education, sound and functionally strong, one which can move resolutely forward without him because he set it up to respond in that way. How appropriate it was that our dean of the School of Education was himself a consummate educator. He was an inspiring teacher, a writer of enormous skill and great productivity, and a speaker of note. These talents he successfully integrated into the fabric of his administrative leadership. I, like so many others, was the beneficiary of his concern for sharing his own learning with others. Across my desk came a steady flow of essays, research articles, and books which Bert thought I really ought to read in order to help me do my own job better. His judgment in these matters was impeccable. Through this kind of sharing with me and with others, the dean extended his salutary influence even more widely throughout the university. I suppose it is true that one cannot really know another person totally. Certainly, that would, for most of us, be true in regard to Burton Blatt. Yet, just as surely as the natural faces of a crystal validly reflect the internal order and symmetry of the structural lattice, the many facets of Burton Blatt told us much about his essential qualities, his work, his ideas, and his goodness as a dean will, like a priceless gem, cast brilliant light upon his school and university for a very long time to come.
When Burt became dean, his vitality burst the seams of that office, and his energy flowed into the lives of all of us. As we celebrate today that light, each one of us on the faculty is thinking about Burt in special ways. But it's my privilege to think aloud about how Burt filled our school with new and happy life in the short 8 years he was our dean. When other schools of education were cutting faculty and closing doors, Burt was getting us to write a new mission statement, submit new proposals, raise $500,000 in research and training grants, overhaul our doctoral programs, renovate Huntington Hall, launch $1 million scholarship drive. One morning in Canada, in Toronto, I got up and turned on television, and there was Burt letting Canadians know that teachers are not like buggy whips. They can't become obsolete. His influence was everywhere, but his presence was in Huntington Hall. How did he manage to sustain faculty morale during these worst of times? He made us believe in ourselves through demonstrating his belief in us. We felt his optimism at every turn. Genuine optimism, never fake. Our modest efforts won immediate praise. "It's beautiful, Margaret," he'd say with just a touch of hyperbole each time education exchange issued forth. Burt was serious and funny. In important meetings, he'd be cleaning that array of pipes, telling outrageous stories, diffusing tension, and always bringing us back to our purpose. The mission of this university, he reminded us, is to provide unique opportunities for the intellectual development of its faculty and students. "Let the Harvards of this world select excellence," he said. "We grow it." Burt was kind and tough. He knew how to grow excellence in his faculty and how to deal with cases of arrested development. Mostly, Burt taught us by example. But in last year's street lecture, he taught us by precept, telling us straight out how to achieve the good life. In his professor stories, he taught us by parable. He knew the force of truth, but he never let a good story suffer from lack of creative imagination. From now on, we'll be telling Burton Blatt stories to teach by parable how to be a great dean. Burt's life as dean is a rich pattern of complexities, a most successful union of opposites. You know, it's one thing to produce a great book. It's another to produce a life of such quality that we can say of it without any hyperbole. It's beautiful, Bert.
Thy beauty, O Israel, upon the high places is slain. How have the mighty fallen? The words of David, king of Israel, apply so well to Bert Black, for he was a man of both beauty and might. Though the aesthetic value of beauty is considered to be in opposition to the power implied in the expression mighty, Bert had the unique ability to recognize their convergence. He possessed a sympathetic, respectful regard for the human personality, but was neither condescending nor patronizing. The gleam in his eye reflected a friendly, sunny disposition, yet he was unyielding in his high moral courage. He was a rigorous scholar, but not rigid, a learned master, yet understanding and accepting. He had a magnificent style, a regal personality, and a royal reach. At the same time, he recognized the mutuality of the fellowship of man. Bert eloquently spoke for the unity of humanity, and he had the rare ability to creatively concretize and to ably apply the principles he represented. He was broad-minded and open-hearted, setting a standard for decency, equality, and freedom, and powerfully paving a path to these heavenly ideals. Bert did not compromise his religious principles. He did not dilute particularity for palatability. He did not trade the universality of his faith for its essence. He was proud to speak of his religious attendance at synagogue services, and equally proud that his three sons, Eddie, Steve, and Michael, occupied the pews next to him. He was a family man, devoted to his loving wife, Ethel, and to his children. I recall the recent family celebration, the marriage of Liz and Steve. Not only his sister and brother and relatives were present, not only members of our Syracuse University family, not only colleagues, but long-time friends from youthful sessions at camp. I refer especially to the rehearsal dinner when a practice of the procession was held. Bert and his sons made their way down the aisle in practice, hand in hand singing, skipping, and dancing, an expression of the togetherness, the joy, and the happiness they shared. A man of dignity, recognized and honored nationally and internationally, yet capable of playful enthusiasm, of enjoying fun and sports. Bert had regard for the integrated personality, for the manifold expressions of human endeavor, for the whole man. He wrote, "Too many of us live rigidly segregated lives." His worldwide reputation was gained for his interest in the handicapped and the less fortunate. But this interest was not merely a matter of sympathy and compassion. To Bert, it was a matter of justice and right. Few of us, if any, knew that Bert's affliction was prevalent over a long period of time. Through it all, he courageously carried out his dedicated work, putting his life on the line to implement the elements essential for building a better world. Bert wrote, "We must make sacrifices, the most valuable of which is offering oneself to a cause. Bert made friends easily. Hannah and I and so many others remain inconsolate and distraught. We are all diminished, impoverished by his loss, but are also enlarged and eternally grateful for the blessed gifts of his Spirit that he left us. The words of the prophet Malachi seem so appropriate and fitting. The law of truth was in his mouth, and unrighteousness was not found in his lips. He walked with peace and uprightness, and turned many away from error. For the lips of a leader speak knowledgeably, and men seek guidance at his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts.